very formally. And
to I'm delighted to see Fault Lines sitting there.
Oh, yeah.
Good old Fault Lines.
Yeah. So I wanted to bring that in and ask you to sign that.
Oh, great.
This is a wonderful book. I'm not quite finished with it. It's so long.
It is long. You think it's long. You should have written it. You think it's long.
But it does move.
I don't have much sympathy for readers who think that book is long.
Well,
you should have been around in 1979, 78, 80, 81, you know.
That's when you started.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's how it, yeah.
It doesn't seem long as I read it. But I know it's long because it's heavy.
Yeah.
And, it reads very fast and reads very well. I want to ask you a few questions about the book and about yourself. I learned a lot in reading Prince of Peace because I think one of the best ways of giving information to people is doing it in a fictional form. There must be a million books on the Catholic Church and the role of the seminary and how priests work in the seminary, nonfiction books that I probably would never, ever read.
Right.
But when you can tell me a story and at the same time give me so much information about it, that's a wonderful way of not only telling what's happening in the world now, but of telling history, don't you think?
That's true. If I have a gift, it's for making history a present. I mean, if I can presume to speak from my own gift, you know, what a presumptuous thing. But when I sit down as a novelist, all I have to work from are the stories of my own experience and the stories of people I've seen and known and cared about. And so for me, it's the most natural thing in the world to tell the story of the American Catholic experience, emphasis on American, from 1950 to 1975, because that is my conscious experience. It's my memory. It's what has made me who I am.
It would be interesting for me to know how much Prince of Peace parallels your own direct experience.
Well, I was a Catholic priest. The Vietnam War undercut my priesthood. I entered a religious order when John Kennedy was the president, and I left the order in the season of Richard Nixon's resignation, and the turmoil of those years was my turmoil, and people on both sides of the great conflict of those years were people I loved.
Would you consider yourself an activist priest?
I was a witness to the great resistance to the war. I wouldn't presume to claim any sort of significant or responsible role in it. But the best men and women I knew in the 60s and early 70s, many of them priests and nuns, many of them young, generous and self-sacrificing young people, had their lives altered completely, if not blown apart, say, by the Vietnam War. And when I left the priesthood in 1974 to become a writer, I knew that I would someday try to tell their story. I wouldn't claim it as my own story so much, but I feel like I only claim the right to tell their story.
I would like to find out how much of the life of James Carroll parallels that of Michael McGuire, outside of the fact that you were a witness to the events in Vietnam and the activism around the war in the 1960s and 1970s. Michael McGuire is born in the Bronx, as I recall. Oh, no, Inwood,
right.
In Manhattan.
As close to the Bronx as you can
yes,
get.
Very close. But not the same thing.
But not the same thing, right.
And of course, where were you born? Let's start.
I was born in Chicago, but like Michael McGuire, the main character in Prince of Peace,
will you start that again and pull you back just a little
bit? I was born in Chicago, but like Michael McGuire, the main character of Prince of Peace, I was born into an intensely Irish Catholic family and an intensely patriotic American family. In fact, unlike Michael, my father was in the military. But like Michael, the second most important institution in my life after America was the Catholic Church. Let me say quickly, on second thought, maybe they were comparable of equal importance. In those days, we emphasized the motto, for God and country, as if they were the same thing. And like Michael McGuire in my novel, I lived through a... I embraced the absolute dream of that world which came to a triumphant high tide under John Kennedy in 1960 when Pope John announced the Vatican Council. The great dream of renewed Catholicism coincided with the great dream of a reinvigorated America. And I was part of that generation who experienced that typhoon of decades, the 60s, in which both of those dreams were really brought down. And so to that extent, my story and Michael McGuire's story are the same. The details of it, his being a war hero in Korea and his being an anti-war hero in Vietnam, his passionate love affair with a woman who begins as a nun, rejects her subservient role in the church, and marries his best friend, those details of my novel are fiction, but the energy of the novel and the way in which the novel is a passionate resumption of the argument of the 60s, those are things I feel very strongly, very, very powerfully.
Where did you go to school?
I started my college years at Georgetown University in Washington, interrupted college to enter the seminary, trained for 7 years in philosophy and theology at Catholic University in Washington, just like coincidentally, Michael McGuire in my novel. So I write about his seminary years.
You were a little hard on Catholic University in the novel.
Well, I talk a lot about what the seminary did in that generation to young Catholic men. I'm critical. The novel is written out of my own passionate conviction as a Catholic, but it's critical of Catholicism, and one of the ways that surfaces is my criticism of the cookie-cutter pattern of seminary formation. And so you could call it hard. I would like to think of it as critical. I'm critical of the kind of role that Catholic priests are forced into by the church. I'm critical today even of Catholic authority and the kinds of requirements they make, not only on clergy but on lay people.
Yes, you can tell that very directly in Prince of Peace, especially in portions of the book that take place in New York City around Cardinal Spellman and the parish priest, particularly in that one chapter which focuses on the building of the rampway to the tunnel where the school was going to be torn down for it. You must have done a... did this actually happen, by the way?
The incident of the conflict.
The school is still standing.
Right. No, it actually didn't happen. No, it was.
But I mean, was there a potential?
There was no particular controversy over that school or that rampway.
It could
as far
have happened,
as I know.
Though. It seems so, yes, so right. Natural because that is the way Robert Moses acted.
My reference to Cardinal Spellman in this novel it's instructive. I'd love the chance to make a point about it. I admired Cardinal Spellman very much. In fact, he was a friend of my family. He was he loomed large on the Catholic scene when I was growing up. He was a cardinal unlike any before or any since, and I think that's why, in a way, there's discussion about him in this season. He shut the door forever on the ability of the American culture at large to discriminate or to dismiss immigrant Catholics. He enabled, I'd say, in some very important way, the election of John Kennedy, the kind of power that Cardinal Spellman represented, the arrival of Catholics in America through the late 40s and 50s. What I talk about in my novel is the way in which Cardinal Spellman represented, there was a dark side to that, and the dark side for me was a matter of his runaway patriotism. And the novel goes into some length about the story of Cardinal Spellman's attempt to impose a Catholic government on a Buddhist population in Vietnam. And that imposition, which I consider a monumental act of vanity and a terrible mistake, was the origin of the American war in Vietnam. So in that sense, I'm quite critical of Cardinal Spellman. But it isn't in any somehow small-minded, anti-clerical way. I'm not concerned at all with his personal life. I'm concerned in a very fundamental way with his role as a power broker in the Catholic Church. And my novel is critical of it, critical of his role. And the poetic parallel, if you want, of the structure of my novel is that I point to the Catholic origins of the war in Vietnam, which is something that hasn't received much attention. And the Catholic origins of the war in Vietnam, in a way, justify the fact that Catholics played an important role in ending the war in Vietnam, so that the main thrust of my story, which is about the Catholic resistance to the war in Vietnam, is rooted in the Catholic origins of it. All of this, of course, sounds abstract and like a work of theological or sociological research. It is, you have to take my word for it, a story about a man, Michael McGuire, who begins as Cardinal Spellman's protege and winds up his fierce opponent.
Let's go back a little bit. When were you ordained?
I was ordained in 1969 by Cardinal Cook.
Where was your first post?
I was the Catholic chaplain at Boston University from 1969 to 1974. And that's part of what I'm writing about.
Your period as a Catholic priest was exclusively in Boston?
It was. And it was only 5 years long. I spent 7 years in training for the priesthood. But
I should go back even further. To become a priest requires a tremendous act of faith, loyalty to the church, and commitment. You obviously had that, or you wouldn't have done it. But why? To be a priest is such a abnormal, I have to hate to use that term, abnormal, unusual life, that it is something which is foreign to me and to most people outside of people like yourself. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, it's too complicated to go into in detail. Let me just say that as I tried to indicate in Prince of Peace, there comes a moment in everybody's life where you discover in a fundamental way who you are. In Michael McGuire's life, he discovered it in a Chinese prisoners of war camp during the Korean War. For me, I had a much more mundane experience. But as a young person, discover a core of religious belief that is irresistible, especially if you're growing up in the 50s, you consider the Catholic priesthood.
Arguably a Catholic family.
Very much so, yes. And it was a wonderful way to live. Wonderful. There was a wonderful quality of complete. You knew where you belonged, where you fit in the universe. And
as a priest?
Well, as a Catholic in those days, and the priest was the embodiment of that experience.
But at the same time, and I just this week I'm doing a series on Thomas Merton based on a new biography of him by Michael Mott, and Merton going to the seminary in Kentucky as a Trappist monk felt that he needed the total blanket security of being a monk and being cared for. Do priests also feel that?
No, you know, the average priest, it's the opposite experience, because the average priest is more involved in the life of the world than anybody. That was my experience when I was a priest. That's why the war in Vietnam had such an impact on me. I was present with young people, college students, for example, when the Kent State shootings took place. And I felt those shootings like they were through my own body. And I knew that I would spend the rest of my life trying to understand what that shock meant. And that was not exempt, a cloistered life like a monk apart. Priests are part of the world. And that's one of the things that makes them irresistible, I think, as not only as people in our culture, but as characters in fiction. And the story of Michael McGuire in Prince of Peace is the story of a man who was intensely alive to the experience of his times. And that's why when I set out to write this novel, in a way I didn't set out to write the novel of the story of a priest. I wanted to write the story of the 60s and the Vietnam War and the experience of the anti-war movement. And I realized as I considered it that nobody embodied those experiences better than a priest. Which is, I think, one of the reasons why priests were so much at the heart of it.
Are you now a Catholic?
I am very much so, yes.
You were a priest for 5 years. Did you become disillusioned with the church in any way?
I said it earlier that I experienced the Vietnam War as an undercutting of my priesthood. It's far too complicated to go into in detail here. Let me just say that As happens with Michael McGuire, the world that supported that absolute commitment was blown apart by that complex of experiences we all associate with the idea of Vietnam. So that when that war ended, I looked around and realized that there was very little left of what I had committed myself to and what I had depended on as a priest. It was difficult to stop being a priest, but it was also, at the same time, the most natural thing in the world.
Outside of these philosophical ramifications, was there a single thing or a single catalyst that made you say, I can't go on, I'm quitting, this is it?
Let me tell you a story about Vietnam. In the late 60s and early 70s, if the B-52 bombers flying with the American flag on them had been dropping over North Vietnam contraceptives, the American Catholic hierarchy would have condemned that war in a minute. But they weren't dropping contraceptives. They were dropping napalm. And the American Catholic hierarchy considered napalm outside their jurisdiction. And so they were morally ambiguous about the war. That was a profound disillusionment for me. So, yes, I have... I had then and continue to have a large argument with the way power is exercised in the church and the way church figures make available the meaning of the gospel. So that's the simple answer to your question. Yes, I have a large argument, and it's an argument that continues, I think. There's been a debate lately about the role of church in politics, and my own feeling is that the church needs desperately to overcome two old bad habits. One is a neurotic preoccupation with outmoded ideas about sexuality and the gender roles of men and women, which is the source of the argument between Archbishop O'Connor and Geraldine Ferraro. And the second bad habit that the church has to overcome, in my humble opinion, is an old bias in favor of right-wing movements and governments, which is the source of the current argument the Vatican has against activist priests in Central America, unlike activist priests in Poland who are celebrated. So I'm a critic of church power. Does that mean I'm not a loyal Catholic? No, it doesn't. But it's because of these experiences I've had that I am writing from the margin of the church now.
James Carroll, you said you left the church to write. That was what you
said? Don, let me correct you and just say I left the priesthood. But I would claim vigorously my identity as a member of the church.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Yes, you left the priesthood to write.
What in 1974. So 10 years ago.
That was a tough decision. Were you writing while as a priest?
As a priest, I wrote half a dozen books of theology and what you might call popular spirituality. My ministry took the form of trying to help people do politics and do prayer. And so I wrote a lot as a priest. In fact, I've written all my adult life. So when I left the priesthood to become a full-time writer of fiction, it was a relatively smooth transition professionally, even if it was a sort of difficult one personally, if you know what I mean.
Tell me about that first novel. It was a mystery, wasn't it?
The first novel was called Madonna Red, and it was about the IRA. And it also had a Catholic context, but it was a sort of a straightforward highly charged espionage novel.
Mm-hmm.
And I've written three other novels besides Madonna Red and Prince of Peace, and they've all been concerned one way or another with the experience of Irish Catholic Americans and with political and social problems. I would like to think, however, that I write books that are interesting to people who are not Catholic, who are not Irish Americans, and who are not like me politically. Prince of Peace is a novel that has for its purpose nothing less, if I can presume to say this, nothing less than to be the story of a generation of Americans.
It's a large and complex novel, and I would assume that it is quite an advance over Madonna Red.
Well, my own experience is that the four novels I've written before Prince of Peace were each in its own way a practice for this novel. Maybe novelists always feel that. I've never felt it before, and I do feel that Prince of Peace is different than my other books. It's a strong, large novel about Catholicism and about America, but at its most basic level, I hope, it's a simple story about a man and a woman who are stunned, if you will, into happiness by their love for each other, despite all of the chaos around them. So it's, at its most basic level, a love story. It's a war story, an anti-war story. There haven't been many anti-war stories. But at its most basic level, it's a love story.
It's a wonderful book and very well written. If I had to nitpick, and I guess critics have to nitpick a little bit, I would have liked to have seen the novels done in third person, I think, rather than first person. Because I felt that there were so many detailed scenes involving Michael, conversations, experiences, that Michael could not adequately convey to the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
He just wouldn't have known all of these things. And mm-hmm. I thought that it may have been probably... Did this come up at all in the editing process?
Well, it was a complicated choice for me. The issue of whether the narrator should be a first-person participant in the story or the omniscient narrator who sits outside the story is always a crucial one. My access to the material, that complicated, chaotic but wonderful story of the 60s and the Vietnam War and the resistance to the Vietnam War, depended, however, on my finding a voice that was close to the material. And I could get much closer to it, much closer to the pain of it, the joy of it, the chaos of it, by speaking in the first person. That was my discovery as a writer. The effect of that choice on the reader is something that I'm a bit removed from. When you describe your experience, I hear you, but all I can say is, as a writer, the material wouldn't have been available to me with anything like the power it was available to me.
I don't think a reader will complain about.
If the narrator hadn't been a participant in the story, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
My four previous novels were all written from the point of view of an omniscient narrator. This is the first time I've ever used the first person, and I may not do it again. I mean, I can't imagine other material that I would conceive of requiring it, you know? This is a very personal book to me. I didn't write this book so much as I sat there while it spilled out of me, And I think part of the reason it was able to spill out of me was because the narrator was so close to my own voice. Not that Durkin, who's much more cynical than I am. He's also funnier than I am. I think he's smarter than I am. I mean, it's a curious experience to be writing a novel and have a character say things that are brighter than anything you've ever said before. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a very funny experience.
He is funny. I mean, you talk about a fellow comes all the way from Israel carrying only a toothbrush and tries to go through customs.
Right.
I can.
Right.
That was one of the funny lines in the book. Right. James Carroll, as a Irish Catholic writing about the themes that you have adopted, do you find yourself in Boston as part of the Boston literary establishment or someone outside of it?
Well, Boston is, in a nice way, marginal to America. We're Boston is a city that's very aware of not being New York. And I'm not aware of there being a literary establishment in Boston in relationship to which I feel marginal. On the contrary, as a Bostonian, I feel part of a marginal city, and in that sense, as a nice community in Boston, I rather like it.
Do you live in Boston proper?
Yes, and I have. I'm married to a novelist, Alexandra Marshall, and we have two children. And
does that cause family friction? Not the children, but the fact that there are two novelists.
No, we actually have a lovely partnership.
Does she read over your stuff? Jim, this just doesn't work.
She's my biggest fan, and I'm her biggest fan. We depend on our editors to make us feel bad about our work. We're committed to make each other feel good about it, if you know what I mean.
Do you actually read it over your each other's material?
Mm-hmm.
But you stay away from the criticism?
Well, not really. I mean, we are frank with each other about what we think. But there's a difference between reading someone's work and editing it, if you know what I mean.
Do you each have your own private workspace?
We do.
Or do you don't have to fight for the time?
No, we don't. We don't. She has her corner and I have my corner.
Well, James Carroll, thank you very much for coming in and spending the last half hour with me talking about Prince of Peace. It's a wonderful book, and you've worked very hard on it. I liked it, and it's a book that is really hard to turn down. And I've been reading it every day, and I resent having to put it down when I get to the office and I get off the bus.
Well, I'm grateful to you for that. I know that someone who reads as much and as thoughtfully as you do doesn't say such a thing lightly, so thank you very much.
Thank you.